Time for more Manic Monologues with your host, Magic, M-A-J-I-C, at BelowTopSecret.com, where anyone who wants to can get on the general talk feed and say whatever they want, as evidenced by this podcast. Well, I've been looking through the thread, and of course, Benevolent's response, her podcast. Thanks, Benevolent. Love you too. I wanted to actually go through and address that. And it's cool. And one of the things I want to do, what I'm really happy about with this, is that it is neat just to be able to kind of, let's get this out there, you know? It's like Benevolent asked, well, do people that know you in real life know this about you? Oh, yes. Yes, they do. whether they may or may not recognize it as being bipolar, man, anyone that knows me knows this about me. So it's not exactly like, I keep my pseudonymity because I'm concerned about people knowing me, finding out the truth. Oh, no. They already know that. There's nobody that's ever, nobody that's known me could possibly not pick that up. So, and I'm not concerned about that. The pseudonymity, I mean, there's just all these funky things like net.stalkers and things like that. I just try and keep things a little vague just to make that harder. So that's what that's all about. But as far as, being able to take a whole bunch of this in one sitting, my advice is to take a break and manage your magic intake. It's always a good idea. And consult your doctor before listening to too many magic podcasts in a row. There could be unwanted and harmful side effects. Also, for what it's worth, I tend to go from one obsession to another. So it's a good idea to spread out my stuff anyway, because, I'll go through and I'll do these manic monologues, and I might disappear for a while. And so, the way to look at that is just spread out the monologues a little, and then you get plenty of magic to tide you over. It just sounds so absurd that anyone would even need that. It's like, oh, there's a product you're really going to... This is actually one of the things that I love exploring the podcast space, as Bruce Dickinson might put it, the fact that we are pseudonymous, the fact that we don't know each other, quote unquote, in real life, actually gives us the ability to talk about the kind of things on the internet that we wouldn't necessarily talk to people in our daily lives about. And the irony of that is that even though the internet is a much larger forum than, the people we meet and work with and whatever on a daily basis, even though it's so large and presumably impersonal, it actually allows us to get more personal, which is one of the things I find a fascinating paradox about the internet. I'm so pleased to hear that Benevolent finds me attractive. Oh, shucks. I like this notion of watching the magic show. Wherever I go, that's where the party goes, baby, But, it's funny. It's like, I can be like that, but I really try not to be too overbearing. And it's funny because my best friend in the whole world is actually someone that most people think of as very quiet. And, a man of few words. But when we get together, he's the one doing most of the talk. Well, okay, I don't know if most. We both talk an awful lot when we get together. So it's kind of ironic. I try not to be too overbearing. Like Sammy Hagar, he used to go to one of the schools in the area where I went to high school. And he was known for being rather overbearing. So Sammy Hagar, love you, man. You take the energy down a notch there, homie. so much for that. And the apologizing, I'm going to try to stop apologizing. If anyone doesn't like these podcasts, hey, the door is right over there. You don't have to listen to them. It's all good, baby. Plenty of other podcasts out there in the sea of podcasting. So I'll try and stop apologizing for being just what I am. So, getting on to this, Benevolent asked some questions like, how old am I? And again, with a nod to the net.stalkers, mid-40s, mid-40s. Don't want to infer my birthday too easily there, right? And as far as my family, I do, that's the thing. I have, I really love my family. I've got a very loving family. We're kind of spread out geographically, and we often will go a long time without communicating, but when we do these data dumps. They're always there. I know they're always there. I live out in the desert deliberately. I wanted to get away out of the city. I wanted to get away from the noise and the interruptions and just give myself kind of a hermetic place where I could work on myself. which is kind of my current project, you know, personal growth, personal development, and preparing for the next stage in life, whatever the bloody hell that might turn out to be. So, you know, that's kind of what this is all about, you know, this current state of affairs. And that's the thing, you know, people are a phone call away if I need them. And I've got people that I know that are in the local area too, you know. So, yeah, I may be out here as a hermit, but I'm not, you know, my isolation is really more physical. And I spend a lot of time on the internet. So, you know, I am socialized. It's just that what I like about the nature of this kind of socializing is that I have direct control over when I want to, you know, to deal with people and when I don't. And if I decide I want to disappear for a while, I can, and it's not a problem. And I love that. It's extremely liberating. And, yeah, I got a couple of kids, and, you know, they're supposedly adults now, and, you know, working their way out in the world. You know? And I remember when I was that age, I was doing the same thing. But they'll be okay. Been married and divorced twice. So, and I've kind of figured out that that's probably not the way for me to go anyway. You know, the thing is, and by the way, you know, especially my last wife, I just adore her, just tremendously adore her. But I am a hard person to live with. And it's just, you know, it's like living with a big kid. And, you know, it's a long story. But that's one of the things about being bipolar is it does tend to affect personal relationships like that. So the challenge for me is structuring my personal relationships in such a way that they're compatible with my being crazy. And to the extent I can do that, well, then life is good. And to the extent I can and cannot, then it can be difficult. And how do people deal with it? Different people deal with it in different ways. What I find is it's just so true. You know, it's like kind of like good fences make good neighbors. Too much of me will drive anyone crazy. And I guess that might go for me too. Interesting. So that's part of it, is just kind of, you know, pacing things out, always leaving wanting more, you know? And going at it from that point of view and just, you know, accepting the way things are and for what it's worth too. I mean, and I'll get into this, I guess, in the next monologue because, you know, that's one of the things that came up in the thread was, you know, can I talk about, you know, the Yarkofen said, you know, how did I actually come to find out that I was bipolar? And there's a story, of course, and it's a long story. It's kind of the story of my life in a way. And I'll get into that in the next monologue, I imagine, the fourth one. So for this one, more about kind of the present. And by the way, shout out to Mr. Heretic out there. And yeah, a thing about there's bipolar disorder and there's like unipolar depression. And they are different things, although, you know, or at least that's the way they're classified now. You know, psychiatry and psychology are very rapidly changing and developing fields of study. So these terms, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, 50 years ago, they were doing lobotomies, you know. Lobotomies have fallen out of favor in the last half century, you know, and it's like, what, a century ago, was it phrenology, you know? So it's, you know, we got to kind of be cautious about this kind of stuff. And you know, I'm using the labels of the day, but, as, you know, some of my fellow members, and of course I point out as well, this is definitely not nailed down yet. And there's, it's, you know, a lot of this is a matter of opinion and speculation and empiricism that's based on, you know, different models that people develop that are somewhat ad hoc when you get down to the bottom of it. Anyway, you know, the notion of just, you know, a little thing about that unipolar depression can be difficult to deal with, obviously, as well. What's interesting is for bipolars, I also go through my depressive phases, and they can be very difficult. Bipolar depression can be pretty darn intense, and and that's actually probably something I should cover in greater detail when I get depressed. A note on that, though, is that it might be harder now to tell when I'm depressed than it used to be. And the reason why is because I've learned, you know, I've applied this. The past few times I've known that I've been depressed, I mean clinically depressed, I can tell I'm depressed, do a little depression inventory. I haven't really been unhappy. I've just been depressed. What I've learned is that being depressed does not necessarily mean I have to be unhappy or emotionally upset about it. The way I look at it now, and by the way, I think this probably applies to unipolar depression as well. You know, if you can, Mr. Heretic out there, when you're depressed, I know it's difficult because when I'm depressed, I mean, you know, Everything seems pointless. I lose energy. I don't want to get out of bed. I don't care about anything. I feel like just there's just no point to any of this. And just generally feel kind of empty and hollow inside, among other things. I also get irritable when I'm depressed, it's just there's a whole range of things. And by the way, it's not always the same, and it can vary. You know, depression, just like with mania, the symptoms can kind of morph around a little bit. We're human beings. We're not machines. And so the condition of our existence, our moods, tends to be rather complex and relates to a lot of different things, not just some imaginary on-off switch inside our brains somewhere. Although you never know, that might be what's behind all this. But my advice to Mr. Heretic is, to the extent you can, take advantage of your depression. And I know that might sound like strange advice, but what I've learned as a bipolar, and the way I look at it now, and it really helps me feel better about it, when I'm manic, I'm burning adrenaline, and I'm staying up, and I'm really pushing my body hard. And it's hard. It's crazy stuff. And, you know, and I'm feeling it now. I've been manic for, like, at least the past week and a half. And, you know, now I'm starting to, you know, the Depakote's kicking in, and I'm feeling sore. One of the things I find out after I've been manic is I got aches and pains because I've been pushing my body physically in ways that I didn't realize. I just get so obsessed with something, and I forget about things like I'm hurting myself, physically hurting myself. You know, I don't notice it. I just kind of ignore it. What depression does for me is it allows me to heal and recharge my batteries. And one of the things I found is that while I tend to be very energetic and I feel really creative when I'm manic, I get my material for that when I'm depressed. Depressed people, for example, unipolar depressives, you'll tend to see a lot of poets, you know, that are unipolar, I think. Depression... you know, that's a whole other study. And like, I'll probably cover that. I mean, these are the manic monologues, right? I might have the depressive monologues, but you know, depression, is a completely different mode of operation, a different psychological mode of operation than mania or what we might think of as a more normal emotional range. But that, and it can feel painful. It can feel painful to be depressed. There's a reason people get bummed out when they're depressed. It's depressing. I think it's possible, to approach depression from a positive standpoint, and at least make it more, not so unpleasant to go through if we realize that depression does in fact serve a purpose, and I think it does, then we can, you know, we can cut ourselves a little more slack for it. And you know, there's a whole thing with this mania and bipolar and depression and all these mental illnesses. You know, it took my last ex-wife pointed this out. You know, she finally said, you know, it took me a while before I finally realized that there's a difference between your mental illness and your character, and that it's easy to mistake mental illness for character flaws. And you know what? That's a pretty important thing to bear in mind. One of the worst things about being depressed is that we tend to beat ourselves up because we're depressed. Well, guess what? When you're depressed and you're clinically depressed and you're depressed because of physiological causes like we are, it's not your fault. You know, who would choose to be depressed in the first place? I wouldn't. I even think it's a good thing to be depressed now, and I still wouldn't want to be. So, you know, a lot of the problems with this whole issue, you know, this issue of disorders and mental illness and all this, is the notion that we're somehow or another responsible for them. What a crock, you know, and what a horrible thing to do to ourselves and to do to other people. Blame ourselves for being the way God made us, you know, what the hell. I think that's pretty dysfunctional thinking, you know, and by the way, that's very common when I'm depressed to think that way. But, you know, the truth is, it's not our fault. And moreover, we can get over, I mean, we can't cure these things. These things are not curable. This is something that seems to be fundamental to the way we are. So we got to learn to live with it. And that can be depressing. Oh man, the overloading of that word, the overloaded meanings of that word are just difficult in this context. But that doesn't mean we can't learn to live with it, and it doesn't mean that we can't have fun. And you know, the thing is, what I'm finding, I talk to people a lot. People used to be able to tell when I was depressed, and now, you know, like when they talk to me on the phone and stuff like that, now it's a lot harder. I mean, you know, the way that most people, like my mom, the way she figures out I'm depressed is, you know, what I'm talking about that I'm doing, which is usually not much. when I'm depressed, you know, I don't tend to be as creative. I don't tend to sit around, you know, I don't tend to be as energized. But I do tend to be contemplative when I'm depressed. I do tend to think about things, and I tend to be philosophical. And see, that's the thing. I think a lot of dealing with bipolar for me has turned out realizing that there's a right time to do some things and there's a wrong time to do some things. And when I'm manic, there's some stuff that I'm really good at and there's stuff that I'm not. And when I'm depressed, there's other things. And there's a kind of a yin and a yang going on there. So that's kind of the way I'm approaching that. But anyway, you know, one of the other things that Benevolent was talking about was, does feeding, you know, does going feeding the mania, is that turn out to be good or bad? Which is a good question. In other words, am I actually making things worse by acknowledging that I'm manic and going for it, like with the Serpo Madness or getting into an album or whatever? And that's an open question, I think. However, my sense of it at this time is that it's actually healthy. It's healthy for me to do it because what that means is when I'm quote-unquote feeding the mania, first of all, it means at least I'm aware of it. The biggest problem that manics have when they're in a manic state is they don't even realize it. And I'll tell you, you'd really think I'd know when I was manic. Excuse me. And somewhere along the line, I usually do figure it out. However, it's usually after I've done something pretty weird, you know, and it takes a while. And this is one of the most confounding things about being bipolar that I found to date is that I can't usually tell at first when I'm manic or when I'm depressed. It's usually a head slap thing. It happens several days, sometimes weeks after I'm in a phase, and I'll go, whoa, hey, I'm depressed. And I didn't even realize it. And the reason why is because moods are so intrinsic to the way we look at the world and the way we think and the way we function, that when they change on their own, we tend to assume that they change for a reason. And of course, there is a reason for these changes. I just don't know what it is. And most no one else seems to either. You know, the fact that manics tend to respond to the same medications, anticonvulsants. Depakote's an anticonvulsant. They give it to people with epilepsy. And for some reason, drugs that work well for people with epilepsy tend to work well for people who are manic. I consider this a clue, and most people in psychiatry do as well. However, we're not quite sure what it means. People are looking into that. But anyway, getting back to this whole business of feeding the mania. Like I said, I think it's an open question, but I think it's actually a good thing, believe it or not, acknowledging it and working with it and managing it. Because if I don't, and I try, and by the way, I can't not be manic. And even with the Depakote I've taken, it blunts it a little bit, but it doesn't really stop what's going on. So I just have to try and kind of work my life around it. And what I found is it's actually better to try and not fight it. It's just better to go with it, manage it, keep an eye on things. And by the way, I have people will check up on me and that I can check in with just to make sure I'm not being crazy. I have a financial advisor that manages my money so that if I get some crazy idea, well, I got to talk to her first, you know, and that works out really well. So there's ways of coping with being manic. And the same thing with depression and stuff like that. I'm not going at this alone. And by the way, for anyone out there, even me, I'm out in the middle of the desert. I certainly recommend for anyone that has these kinds of issues, you don't want to have to face them alone. And you know, the truth of the matter is no one really is alone anyway. And I'm sorry, this is going so all over the place. But I just, you know, I'm kind of free-form rambling here about this whole notion of mania and how it affects me and stuff like that. And, you know, this whole how do you deal with it and benevolence questions and stuff like that. I've got a note here written down. I can't remember what it was now about diffusion. I don't know if there is a way to diffuse it. I don't think there is. I really, you know, it's sort of like, I'm reminded of on The Simpsons when Bart, you know, and by the way, attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder, I think may very well be closely related to this. Although I think a lot of what's diagnosed as ADHD, is actually the symptoms of boyhood. Look at the stats. It says a lot. You know, boys will be boys. Boys are naturally energetic. Boys do have testosterone in their system, and there's a reason that boys are mischievous. It's not necessarily a disease. And by the way, that also applies to young men. Young men are supposed to go out and fight with other young men for the females, and that's the role that young men are given. And if they're not in an army somewhere, then they'll be out protesting in the streets, or they'll be out in gangs, or they'll be out, you know, hooting and hollering and being thugs and villains or whatever, because that's what young men are supposed to do. My opinion. Your opinion may vary. But anyway, so there's my quick thing on ADHD. And by the way, I realize that there really is such a thing as ADHD, and I really do realize that there are stuff has to be done about it in those cases. However, I think it may not necessarily be quite as rampant as we might think it is. I mean, come on. Expecting kids to sit in chairs for hours at a time to learn. Who came up with that plan? What's the deal with that? Come on, you know? I mean, we're talking about kids. Kids are supposed to be running around. I mean, they're not. So anyway, that's a topic for a whole nother pod thread. But anyway, getting back to the notion of, you know, feeding the mania versus trying to fight it. What I think I'm finding is, you know, by going with the mania, I don't mean just, you know, abandoning all sense of proportion and just going crazy and hedonistic and wild and stuff like that. What I mean is simply acknowledging what it is. It's a force, you know. Oh, where I was going with that was Bart Simpson in the Focusin episode. They give him Focusin for his ADHD, and he becomes really, you know, sharp-minded, like a laser beam. And that's the way I feel like when I'm manic. You know, I can really, really just focus on things and really get into them. And, you know, an analogy for that is it really is. It's like having a laser beam in my hand, and whatever I point it at, it can just cut right through it. The thing is, I can't turn it off. I get this laser in my hands, and whatever I point it at, it's just, you know, and that's mania. And what does mania feel like? This is one of the things I wanted to talk about. What does it feel like to be manic? I was in high school back in the 70s, okay, and back in those days there were a lot of drugs going around in the schools, and I will not deny that I tried my fair share, and absolutely none of them comes anywhere near being anywhere close to as pleasant as mania. Mania is better than any drug I've ever tried, by far. And this is one of the reasons why people who quote-unquote suffer from mania tend to resist treatment, yours truly included, because it is so pleasant. There's a downside to it, but I'll tell you, man, when people talk about being high on life, I know what that's all about. Mania is the Roxor. It's the bomb. I mean, you know, analogies for what it's like. being manic is like hitting home runs out of the park, you know, in a stadium full of people, just one after the other, you know. It's just like, yeah, 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 you know. It's like kissing a girl for the first time, you know. It's just like being Kim Jong-il and getting a hole-in-one, you know, in every hole in your first game of golf. It's the best day of your life every moment when you're manic. It's just the best. There's no comparison for it. It's the top, you know. Think of, you know, the excitement you feel when you just won the lottery, you know. Well, every time I'm, you know, when I'm manic, I feel like I just won the lottery every moment, you know. So that's why I, you know, and a lot of other bipolars, you know, we realize that there can be issues with that. And by the way, one of the issues can be exhaustion, physical problems as a consequence of being, you know, pumped up on adrenaline, because that's what it essentially boils down to. When I'm manic, I'm on adrenaline. You know, it's a thrill. It's a constant rush. It's just, yeah, yeah, I'm manic. I feel good. Oh, you could probably hear it in my voice. I still do. You know, I took a bunch of Depakote last night, and I took a little bit today, and I'm just trying to modulate my mania down so I can get some more sleep and just try and recover and stuff, and stop squirming enough to where I can start recording music. And, you know, I'm still enjoying it. It's just so good. I just can't help it. It just feels so good. You know, just imagine if you will. I mean, for anyone out there that's bipolar, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. It's just the best. There's nothing like it. You know, it's the reward. See, that's the thing. Mania, for those of us who suffer from mania, suffer. I just love the irony of that word. It's the reward that normal people get when something really good happens in their lives. Except for us, we just get this big, long bulk shipment of it, and the thing that's so cool about it is that even though I've been manic many times in my life, and even though I've been manic now for at least a week and a half, it doesn't get old. It still feels good. It feels good right now. I feel kind of silly even talking about it like this, but I just want to share this element of this for people that might wonder, well, you know, what's it like? It rocks. It just rocks. Anyway, I'll try to stop gushing about it, but seriously, I don't want to be cured. You know, I tried to cure this for years. When I found out that I was bipolar, I worked through with my psychiatrist, and actually there was more than one psychiatrist. I actually had multiple psychiatrists that I was consulting and a psychologist, and did everything I could. I tried every drug in the U.S. that you can legally use, both on and off the FDA label, to try and control my bipolar. And I've also used SSRIs, and they're really things. By the way, SSRIs for depression, for bipolar, in my case at least, and this is something if you're bipolar you want to watch out for, watch out. Yeah, they can clear up the depression, but they can also cause another manic episode that's even worse than the normal ones. So you really got to watch it with the drugs. But what all that boiled down to, none of them really did none of them really worked. So, you know, the only thing that, like, Depakote helps. One of the things that happens when I'm either manic or depressive, I can get a craving to drink alcohol. And I think what that's all about is I'm just trying to dull my mind when I'm manic, and calm down a little bit. And in depression, I think I might just be, you know, the drink to forget thing. The problem is that it doesn't even really work. And I can drink, especially when I'm manic, I can drink way too much. And the adrenaline in my system counteracts the depressant effects. And that can cause some serious physical damage. I got to watch my liver, you know, just seriously. And it's funny because I do have the ability to drink large quantities of alcohol without necessarily, I mean, you know, it's alcohol, so it does impair me, but I'm manic on the other hand. So it's like taking stimulants and alcohol at the same time, which is a freaky combination. So, how do I live with it, you know? By the way, I have it noted here, you know, as benevolent, you know, I kind of noted it down as well. Is living it out damaging or therapeutic? I think it's therapeutic. The biggest problem I've had being bipolar in my life is hating myself because I was bipolar, hating myself because I was different, hating myself because I didn't fit in, and feeling alone because I didn't. And now that I've come to accept that I at least am bipolar and that that's part of who I am, I feel a lot better about myself. I don't feel as much frustration about not fitting in. My attitude of it is that I'll find my own place in the world, and I'll do what I'm going to do my own way. I'll do it my way. And so that's kind of my attitude on all that at this point. Man, I've been rambling on. It looks like it's about 28 minutes now. So it looks like it's time to shut down another manic monologue. But, it's been fun for me. If it's been half as much fun for you as it's been for me, then I've had twice as much fun than you have. Or something like that. So until for the next manic monologue, or whatever it may be, this has been Magic, MAJIC, at BelowTopSecret.com. Wishing you good mental health and good times, friends. Take care.